I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. From T-shirts to line dances, could Black folks' pride in Senator Barack Obama put his White House bid in peril? Plus, Tyler Perry makes history and enemies with the opening of a new studio. And what do Halle Berry and Eminem have in common? We've assembled some pop culture pundits for a special edition of our Bloggers Roundtable. Joining in the conversation today, we've got Danielle Belton of the blog Black Snob and Corey Richardson of Vexed in the City. Hi, folks.
Hello, Farai.
Hey.
So Election Day is just 3 weeks away, so we begin with this. Are Black folks going too far in their support of Barack Obama? Now, a middle school teacher in Missouri was suspended after posting a clip called Obama Youth, Junior Fraternity Regiment on YouTube. There was a group of male students in gold boots and army fatigues doing a step routine, kind of like, you know, the Black fraternities, and reciting parts of Obama's campaign platform. And don't leave out the older set. They are getting in on the Obama love, too. A group in Detroit, Michigan called Seniors United posted their own YouTube clip of a line dance they call the Obama Hustle. Here is part of the video.
We have something real hot and special for all seniors to learn. We have a hustle for Obama. It's called Seniors Moving for Obama. When Obama wins, we are going to be doing this hustle. So come on, join us. Let's do it. Here we go.
Okay. 500,000 views on YouTube. Danielle.
Yes.
Are Black people tripping?
To a certain extent, you know, yes. I mean, but who's really surprised here? I mean, when Barack Obama kind of crossed over from political sensation to the point of, like, icon rather quickly with African Americans, I want to say, like, the minute he won Iowa, you know, it went from being, oh, what an interesting guy. It's really nice he's running for president. You know, I don't really know that much about him, to, oh, my goodness, you know, he's the next Martin Luther King. So it's not surprising that people are kind of getting a little over the top with it, because I think it's just, they're just so proud. It's never happened before. They don't really have anything, there's no hallmarks to really draw on, you know, there's no watermarks to determine what's appropriate, what's not. It's not so much different from, you know, people at Sarah Palin rallies, you know, chanting drill baby drill and, like, wanting to dress like her and, like, selling out of her eyeglasses because they all want frames exactly like her frames. So sometimes the line between celebrity and politician can really get blurred really fast.
All right. Corey, what do you think?
Well, yeah, to Danielle's point, I think that we have reached a point in America with reality television, with the, you know, the constant news networks, where there is a melding of politics and reality and celebrity. And I think Barack Obama has become, you know, I'm a child of the 80s. He's like Michael Jackson was to us when Thriller came out. You know, it's like it's Michael Jackson combined with every other pop star of the 80s, and you just so happen to get a chance to vote for him for president.
Well, what about this? Let me throw this into the mix. You remember that Ludacris had this kind of battle rhyme song where he threw insults at Senator McCain and President Bush and said, paint the White House black, said something about Hillary, too. And the Obama campaign had to denounce the lyrics. So, you know, are there some people who are out there just kind of doing whatever they want about the senator that could actually undermine him?
Well, I think it only becomes an issue when it's someone with a big name attached to it. Like this teacher, I mean, obviously this is some, you know, this is just an individual we don't even know. He did it on his own. It became a viral video on YouTube. So it's like there's no need really for the Obama campaign to even, like, acknowledge that it exists. But when you got someone like Ludacris, where there's pictures of Barack and Ludacris together, he's praised him in the past. You know, Ludacris is a well-known figure both as a rapper and as an actor, and had his own, like, you know, Bill O'Reilly issued a fatwa against him basically, you know, a few years back and got him fired, you know, from his gig that he had with Pepsi as an endorser. So what Ludacris says is going to carry a little bit more weight than, you know, what some, you know, middle school teacher does.
Yeah, but I would also say that we have reached an interesting point with the candidacy of an African American of president, where now we are looking at associations and who knows you and who's supporting you and who's endorsing you, and all of a sudden this has become a actual political fodder. So, yeah, you know, you say Ludacris made this song, You know, there's probably people out there. I mean, there's a song right now. If you go on the internet and you type in the Republican song, it says don't vote for a Democrat. But no one's asking John McCain to denounce that. Mm-hmm. You know, he can just kind of go along and be like, hey, you know what? People make songs about me all the time. It's whatever. But Barack Obama's got to be like, you know, I know Ludacris.
But who made the don't vote for a Democrat song? I mean, was it like Shania Twain? You know,
who knows? I don't know who the guy is.
That's the thing is, though, people know who Ludacris is. I don't think people. That's the why that was a story. It was more to do with the fact that he was such a well-known celebrity. I mean, he'd been in Crash, which had been a phenomenal movie. You know, he had a lengthy storyline on Law and Order, SVU at the time.
Yeah, he's crossed over into acting. But let me, Corey, move on to something else that you did. Corey's campaign countdown to the N-word. What the heck is that?
All right, look, this campaign is getting ugly. It's getting ridiculously ugly. It's become, with John McCain losing and dropping in the polls, he's made the concerted effort that he said he's going to go negative. And that's, you know, it's understandable. It's what you do when you're behind and you got to throw the Hail Mary. But, I mean, these people are getting, they're getting kind of close to getting into dangerous territory and dropping that N-bomb eventually. And I got a haunting suspicion that one of these rallies it's going to start with just somebody in the back yelling it out, and then people are going to get kind of emboldened by it. And while I do it in jest and say, hey, you know, it's kind of funny, I mean, John McCain's been known for his temper. He was in the Navy, and the phrase talking like a sailor or cussing like a sailor is known in the American lexicon. And I mean, if you watch the most recent debate, John McCain does not like Barack Obama. I mean, there's no love lost between the two of them.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, I think that I don't think that it's actually, well, maybe not. I mean, maybe it's going to happen. It could. But the amount of race baiting, the amount of just animosity that's being thrown out, the vitriol that I see when I'm watching some of these rallies, it's just like, okay, clearly it's coming.
Yeah, you know, when you see the fact that where they're going with it, I mean, with the whole bring up the William Ayer, same thing all the time, basically trying to encourage this whole attitude that he's somehow involved in some sort of nefarious dealings. They never exactly say what or who they think Barack Obama is. It's like, well, it's an implied thing. It's like an inside joke. And they really don't do anything to tamp it down. If anything, they keep trying to ramp it up at the rallies. It's gotten more and more, you know, bigger and bigger each time. You have people shouting out terrorist, you know, and people say, when like McCain would say Barack Obama's name, talking about him, you know, who is this guy? People in the audience shout terrorist. There was an incident where they're, you know, screaming invective at the media who's there to cover the event because they've demagogued the media so much. And there was a black cameraman, you know, they called him boy and shouted out a racial epithet at him. So I don't necessarily know, I don't necessarily think McCain's going to be the one to do it, but I think the rallies will, I mean, at some point, it's going to get out of control. They're being filmed all the time, and he's going to have to explain it.
All right.
He's going to have to deal with it.
All right, Danielle and Corey, I just want to make sure that anyone tuning in midway is informed that this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. You are Danielle Belton and Corey Richardson, bloggers. Danielle, your blog's The Black Snob. Corey, Vexed in the City. And this is a special edition of our Bloggers Roundtable. I want to move on to some lighter fare. Tyler Perry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We know him for wearing dresses and making money. He opened the 30-acre Tyler Perry Studios facility in Atlanta earlier this month. He's the first African-American to own and operate a major television and movie studio, but it's not all good news. Protesters with the Writers Guild of America lined the street outside, chanting, "Tyler Perry has no shame." His writers aren't unionized. And Corey, what's your, you know, perspective on this?
Well, anybody who knows me knows that I have a prejudicial opinion against Tyler Perry. Not just, you know, I just don't like his movies. I think they're not very good.
Amen.
That's just my opinion.
Preach.
You know, now you've just given me more reason to be angry at Tyler Perry. I would protest too. If they were protesting the fact that, you know, he didn't have the proper, wasn't meeting fire code, I would be out there.
But what about this? What about this specific charge, which some people have said is a black producer versus black writers?
Well, I mean, I think that it's legitimate in that, you know, when you get to a certain point, it's no longer about, well, just because I'm black and you can't hate on me because I'm black. And mm-hmm. you know, you got to play by the rules and you got to bring other folks up with you. Now, if the rules are that you go with the screenwriters and you go with that Writers Guild, then you got to do it. Now, if you're out there and you're anti-union, you're going up against your own people, I take issue with that. Now, does it help that I don't like Tyler Perry movies? No. It makes me more prejudicial, actually. I'm sorry. I just can't bring myself to say anything nice about Tyler Perry.
So, Danielle, you also have written about Tyler Perry's movie, The Family That Prays, and said he is not good enough to be called a hack. What do you mean by that? I mean, it's pretty clear that you're not impressed, but specifically, what about that movie?
Well, the thing that I was amazed by was the no knowledge and the complete lack of context on how to tell a story. You know, just the fundamental basics of filmmaking. You know, beginning, middle, end, climax, you know, being able to show rather than tell, you know, your work, being able to stage your actors properly and instruct them not to overact. I mean, that was one of the biggest issues. The writing was terrible. I mean, it was abysmal writing. But also, it's like he hasn't learned how to make a proper film for a film period that should be shown to anyone. Like, it's not even proper for, like, Lifetime television. It's that bad. And one of the biggest issues is he's a stage man. He's a stage actor. He's written stage plays. And in the theater realm, you have to overact to a certain extent so you can break through out to the audience. They can really, you know, get the emotions across. But if you're being filmed for television or for a movie, you have to draw it back and be more natural. This could have been a really brilliant piece of work, but, you know, it wasn't very deep. It was, you know, paper thin. A lot of the character was no character development. And, you know, I'm a movie lover, and a lot of people tried to argue with me. Well, you know, he hires our people, you know, he hires actors that you rarely would ever see. And I'm like, yeah, that's nice.
But I mean,
I'm not asking for him to make the color purple. I'm asking him to live up to the level of a hack, which is someone who can just, they can throw together a movie. They can do
all
the
right.
basic fundamentals.
Okay, we have to stop you because you were on a roll with butter. And we have to get to one more set of topics, which is Tyler Perry. What about Halle Berry? Esquire named the 42-year-old actress the sexiest woman alive. And while that magazine is giving props to Halle, Vibe is paying all respect due to Eminem. Now, Vibe fans called the Detroit MC the best rapper alive and really marked him up over Jay-Z. Very controversial move. Corey, what do you think?
I think that Eminem is an excellent rapper. I'm a hip-hop fan. I think that as an artist, Eminem is great. I think that it's dubious to say that he may be the best rapper alive right now, considering the fact that he hasn't really put anything out in the past 2 years. You know, amongst his contemporaries, yes, in my top five of MCs, I will put Eminem in that top five. Is he number one? I got to hear the next Eminem album to find that one out. I mean, Jay-Z has been putting out consistent product. Nas has been putting out consistent product. Eminem is great. I mean, he's got some verses out there on some stuff. I think one of my favorite Eminem verses is on a DJ Clue CD. This song is called What the Beat, and he rides the beat. I mean, on Renegade, on Jay-Z's Blueprint album, he kills Jay-Z on his own song. I don't doubt that Eminem is a great rapper. I don't doubt that Eminem is a top five rapper, maybe even a top three rapper. Is he the best rapper alive? I need another album to find out.
Danielle, what do you think?
Well, I feel like that is kind of like an overstatement. I mean, he is a brilliant rapper. I think he's very talented. But, you know, him, I also think that, you know, compared to, like, Jay-Z, they're two very different artists. But also, I have to, you know, agree with that Eminem does not have the same body of work as Nas or as Jay-Z or, you know, even, you know, dead rappers, you know, like Tupac and Biggie, where people who've put out
They
several,
did specify alive.
I realize that, but...
Well, Danielle, let me transition you to Halle Berry. 42 years old, just had her first baby. She is named the sexiest woman alive. What do you read in the tea leaves about American aesthetics from that, if anything?
She's hot, and men of all stripes find her hot. I mean, Halle Berry is a universally hot woman. I mean, I've had my issues with her as an actress in some of the roles that she has picked, but, you know, I'm not going to argue with her hotness. It's like when people say Angelina Jolie is beautiful. She is. So, you know, that's just that.
It's that simple, Corey?
We're moving into a point in America, and I know this is, I'm getting a little deep, but we're kind of looking at beauty, and it's transcending ethnicity, and that you were talking about Angelina Jolie, or you talk about Halle Berry. You don't look at them and look at them and say, well, Halle Berry's a beautiful black woman. You just go, she's fine. You don't look at Angelina Jolie and say she's a beautiful white woman. You just go, she looks good. But there are characteristics in Halle Berry and Angelina Jolie that are not uniquely black or uniquely white. They're in some ways an exotic mix of many things, which is what makes them beautiful. Now, to say Halle Berry has been picked as the sexiest woman alive, the most beautiful woman alive, I'd like to meet the publishing or the editorial board at Esquire and give them all a high five.
It's a no-brainer. It's like saying Naomi Campbell is a hot woman. Yes.
Is this, you know, a lot of people are saying that this is a post-racial era, but is this still one where there's some kind of the black team wins because Halle wins, or is it, are we beyond that? Danielle?
I don't think this has anything to do with race at all. This is just about the hotness.
Okay, Corey?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're moving away from the black team and the white team. I mean, we're moving into a country where you're going to have, where there is now a different shade of brown, which is permeating our sense of aesthetic and beauty. I mean, so, you know, the days of the black team winning, I think, are gone.
Corey, Danielle, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We were talking to Corey Richardson, who spouts off at Vexed in the City. He spoke with us from NPR member station KUT in Austin. And Danielle Belton runs the blogs Black Snob and the Secret Council of American Negroes. That's our show for today, and thank you for sharing your time with us. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. To join the conversation or sign up for our newsletter, visit our blog at nprnewsandviews.org. News and Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Tomorrow, not everyone is politically blue or red. What about green or none of the above? We take a look at third parties and independent voters. I'm Farai Chidea. This is News and Notes.